A number of years ago, I saw a fridge magnet that sort of was a commentary on our society today. It said, "I used to care, but I now take a pill for that." It seems we have a pill for everything, right? We have a pill if you're too sad. We have a pill if you're too happy. We have a pill if you're too active and can't sit still. We have a pill to prevent grieving, a pill to help with weight loss, a pill to help with weight gain. We have pills to make you strong, pills to make you go to sleep, pills to wake you up, pills to keep you awake. And then we start getting into side effects. Antidepressants often cause depression, so we have more pills for that. And some painkillers, it's fine by me. I think she likes me more than she likes you. That's strange, because I'm not the kind of guy kids love. I love kids, but they don't flock to me. Anyway, but we have painkillers that cause addiction, and we have pills for that, too. So I was quite excited when I come across this results of this study they'd done, that people of faith have fewer mental problems. We have less stress, less anxiety, less depression, less post-traumatic stress syndrome, most postpartum depression, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, we require less pills. What I found interesting was this study was just not talking about Christians. It was talking of people of faith. And they went through, and I lost interest when I started getting into what the results, how they figured their results, because they were leaving out the best resource book there is. In Ecclesiastes 3:1, God tells us that he has set eternity in the hearts of men. Every human being knows there is an after. And every major religion in the world has to deal with the after. Right? The Muslim has his paradise. The North American Indian has what we quote, the happy hunting ground. I cannot pronounce what they call it. The Australian Aboriginal has their dreamland. The African Zulu has the spiritual world of the greatest of the great. The Hindu and the Buddhist, they just recycle it. They believe in reincarnation. But as I examined the things, just not real seriously, I was just looking through, finding out what different people believed in for an end time, for afterlife, I made a very interesting discovery that every major belief is somehow based on the Ten Commandments with a few caveats. Like, you shouldn't murder unless they pick on you or unless they're from a different religion or a different tribe. You shouldn't lie unless it helps you gain your purposes and they're not of your faith. You shouldn't commit adultery unless you're a man. Why is it that all of these belief systems are based partially, somehow, on God's Ten Commandments? I think, again, the greatest resource book in the world tells us that. Romans 1:20 tells us that everything about God is revealed in his creation. I actually really love the way that Psalms 19:1-4 puts it. It says, "The heavens declare the glory of the Lord. The expanse shows his handiwork. Day after day they pour out speech, and night after night they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice has gone out through all the earth, their words to the end of the earth." Not only is eternity set in the hearts of man, but God is known. But we have a real problem today because society does not want to believe in God. I believe the reason that people don't want to believe in God is that if you believe in God, then you have to admit that you're accountable to him. And so we want to do our own thing, and so what we try to do is we try to remove God. I find it interesting how we build cities and we light them. I remember reading a years ago study they were doing down in the States. This one town was, big city, was having tremendous trouble with vandalism at schools. And so somebody come up with the bright idea of turn the lights off. Then if somebody's in there, they need to see, they need a light, we can spot them easier, right? Well, it turns out that bad guys are scared of the dark too. When the schools that had their lights turned off, their vandalism rates just disappeared, right? But we take and we build a city and we light it. You can't see the stars. You'd be amazed how many people who've grew up in the city can't believe when they get out some night and the stars are out. You can't see God's handiwork, and yet there's all these studies coming out how we need more park space because it's good for mankind's mental health. Mankind needs to see God. We were built to communicate with God. So when we remove God, we remove truth. And so we start teaching fairy tales like evolution. We turn the endearing truth of a man who unselfishly shared his wealth with the less fortunate into a tale about a jolly fat man with a team of supersonic reindeer led by reindeer that must have had a GPS-powered nose. No wonder our kids can't face reality because they find that some of the first things we teach them in life are lies. But we do have a pill for that. Today we are celebrating the birth of Jesus. He's the one who said in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He's the one who said in Matthew 11:28, come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. Luke 19:10, he tells us to come, that he came to seek and to save that which was lost. That verse has took on a whole new meaning for me in the last couple of months. I had some bad luck. I blew a motor on my Mack truck, and I couldn't find parts. I ended up having to find a replacement motor, and I learned a long time ago that the easiest way to line up a clutch in a big truck like that is bolt them together with the clutch slid onto the transmission shaft, and then you can slide your clutch forward, line the bolt holes up, and it's none of this lining, all this lining up stuff. And so I was doing that, and a lot of trucks in the bottom of their bell housing, there's a little hole, and you can actually buy a special tool that sticks in there, and you can turn it really easy. I just use a big screwdriver. But my Mack doesn't have that hole down there, but on the front pulley, there's this great big nut bolted on. It's got a bar, an inch and a quarter nut. So I took my three-quarter inch socket and a three-quarter inch drive socket, and I was using this, and it turned pretty easy. But it kept, every time I let go, I had to lay it aside. So I got my torque wrench out. It's 3.5-4 feet long. And I put it up there, and I could just let it sit on the frame. And then I could roll my creeper back underneath and start another bolt and then roll ahead and just lay down there one hand. And well, when I was done, I put the socket in the container there where it belongs, and I laid my torque wrench down. And as I was walking away, I thought, Marvin, you shouldn't leave that there. That's a dumb place to leave it. You'll never find it again. And I haven't. I don't know if I left it on the side of my truck and drove away and it fell off. But, you know, there's an interesting thing about that. You see, that's my torque wrench. And even though it's lost, it's still my torque wrench. And somebody else might have picked it up on the road, and he might be using it in his shop. It's serving him, but it's still my torque wrench. And if I ever find it again, it's still my torque wrench. This Bible verse tells us that we were God's. He created us. We got lost. And he came to seek and to save us. That verse has new meaning for me now. What Jesus came to do is to offer us a pill that will cure all of society's ailments. I have heard it called in the past the gospel pill. And it is the only pill that works, and it only has beneficial side effects. My daughter was in a play many years ago in school. She went to the school out at Cremona, Valley View Children's Home, and there's a lot of problem kids out there. And anyway, they put on a plays, mini plays. And she sang a solo in this one. And the chorus of the solo said, Come unto Jesus. Give him your life today. Come unto Jesus. Let him have his way. His way is the only way you'll find rest for your soul. We're going to close our service singing Silent Night. And as we sing this song, I want us to look down into that manger. Not that manger we see in the nativity scene where they have this nice little cradle-shaped thing and they have some straw hanging out of it. I don't know who feeds their animals straw in the manger. But and we have this little baby in there, and he's not like the one we see in the pictures of in our Bible where he's laying there and he's got this gold beam around his head. We're looking at a baby. I was thinking of that. The first picture I have of my granddaughter, she wasn't even cleaned yet. This is our Jesus. This is our Savior. And I don't know if there was hay in that manger, but that manger was nailed to a wall in a barn to keep feed from falling on the floor and being wasted. I can imagine they had a blanket or maybe Joseph's coat they laid under it to keep the straw and the dirt and the hay from getting in his clothing. I know he's all wrapped up. They're outside, really. I don't know if we can see if he's got any hair. I heard one lady describe how she was looking forward to a baby and all she was interested was 10-10 and a smile. Well, we can't see if he's got 10 toes or 10 fingers. And we know that he's young enough that if he's got a smile, it means he's got gas. As we stand down looking into that manger with our Savior, our Prince of Peace, I want us to examine ourselves. Are we really, as Ephesians 5:27 describes us, are we really a church without spot or wrinkle? Are we living as that baby expects us to live, as he has commanded us to live? I can get all spit polished up. I can come to your place, but if I come tramping through your kitchen with manure on my boots, I'm still tracking manure. We as a person and we as a church can only be as clean as our filthiest garment. This is our last church service of this year. The next time we meet as a church, it's going to be a brand new year. Ooh. Wouldn't it really be something if the next time we met as a church, we were really that glorious church?